This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another accuser. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Tuesday, March 2nd. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
A third woman has come forward to say New York Governor Andrew Cuomo made unwanted sexual advances.
President Biden and Democrats in Washington are trying to finalize his coronavirus stimulus package without the minimum wage hike.
The Department of Homeland Security says it will try to reunify migrant families inside the U.S. after they were separated under the Trump administration.
And where have the students gone during the pandemic?
So this is happening in a lot of big cities. We've seen enrollment drop across the nation. In public schools. A lot of that is kids in pre-K and kindergarten who never showed up to enroll. So these were not kids that were necessarily in the school system before. It's really happening in a lot of large school districts.
Mariah Belinget at the Washington Post on the unprecedented numbers of students who've disappeared during the pandemic and schools' efforts to find them. A third woman has accused New York Governor Andrew Cuomo of unwanted advances. The New York Times says 33-year-old Anna Rook has claimed that Mr. Cuomo asked to kiss her at a wedding in 2019. She specified that Mr. Cuomo put his hand on her bare lower back, then asked for a kiss when she moved his hand. Over the past week, two of Mr. Cuomo's former aides have accused him of sexual harassment, something he has denied. New York City Republican Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis on Fox News.
I believe whether it is by resignation, prosecution, I don't think he even makes it to the ballot box next year for sure. The governor is going to have to leave because this is just piling on and it's way too much for New Yorkers to tolerate.
The latest allegation comes as Attorney General Letitia James announced that the governor's office sent a letter permitting her office to perform an independent investigation. A spokesperson for Mr. Cuomo referred to a previous statement in which the governor apologized for things that, quote, have been misinterpreted as unwanted flirtation. President Biden and fellow Democrats on Capitol Hill are trying to resolve the remaining disputes over the coronavirus relief package that they hope will pass the Senate this week, despite intra-party frustrations that a hike in the minimum wage won't be included. Some Democrats have been focusing on how the $350 billion in funding for state and local governments is allocated. Others are trying to reduce the number of upper-middle-class families that would receive the $1,400 stimulus checks. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Even famous liberal economists and liberal editorial boards are saying their half-baked plan is poorly targeted to what families need.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
I expect a hearty debate and some late nights, but the American people sent us here with a job to do, to help the country through this moment of extraordinary challenge.
If the Senate passes the overall $1.9 trillion measure without the wage increase, it will return to the House, where liberals could derail it if they refuse to vote for the aid package without the minimum wage part. Is President Biden's stimulus plan a carefully targeted relief bill or a giant Democratic spending orgy? Rick Newman, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance, says it's a mix of both. Rick, explain.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of questions from our audience and our readers saying, what's actually in this bill? A lot of people probably know about the checks that will be going out to most Americans, $1,400 per person. An unemployment insurance extension, that program, an extra, it's going to go up from $300 a week to $400 a week, and that'll be extended into September. There's a lot else in this program, too. So there's a lot of aid to states and cities, $350 billion. That's a lot of money. States and cities need some money. I don't know if they need that much money. There is more aid for small businesses, especially restaurants. There will be some money targeted to restaurants. More aid for housing. This is for people who are struggling to pay their rent or their mortgage. And then a new extension of paid leave, making more workers eligible for that. going through September. You can argue about the amount of money Congress is putting toward all those programs. It's a lot of money. It could be more than we need. But I think those parts of the bill, at least you can say they are meant to address the immediate effects of the coronavirus pandemic and the economic downturn that it has caused. There are other things in here that don't, but those big provisions at least do count as relief, in my opinion.
I'm off the subject here just a little bit. The housing aid of $40 billion, how does that get distributed? That go to states and then on to specific locales? And then if you're a struggling renter, you fill out an application and hopefully get a check? How would that work?
A lot of this, that's how it works. It's administered. So it's money that goes, for example, in the form of block grants to states, which then can set up their own programs, because states and often it's cities, they're the ones that actually have the programs to help people on the ground. The federal government doesn't like to just start up its own program from scratch. Remember when we did that with Obamacare back in 2013, the website that didn't work for 2 months? So Washington would rather just provide the money because it can just borrow it, which states and cities can't. They have to pay it back. But then let states and cities figure out how to get it to people who need it.
We're speaking with Rick Newman, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance. His piece is called The Good and Bad in Biden's Giant Relief Bill. All right, so you position this as legit relief measures versus the Democratic wish list. Talk about the wish list.
Sure. One of the big things in here that clearly has really nothing to do with coronavirus is a pension relief measure, which would provide around $75 billion for what are called multi-employer pensions. These are often the types of deals that unions, like think of the Auto Workers Union, for example, they will strike a deal with most of the big automakers to fund their pension. And there are a lot of pensions that are just severely underfunded. So there would be $75 billion for that. I mean, I think Republicans have been very critical on this, and I think they have a fair point. You can argue whether Congress ought to appropriate this money, but this is not something you can really characterize as coronavirus relief. There also are some changes, many people would say improvements, to the Affordable Care Act. This is about $53 billion in the bill. Democrats have wanted to do these, make these changes for a long time. They just have not been able to because Republicans have been able to block it. But one important thing these would do, I've reported on this problem a lot. People who make too much money to qualify for subsidies under the Affordable Care Act, but do not get health insurance through an employer, often just get stuck paying through the nose for insurance they have to buy on their own. I don't want to bore your audience with this, except it is really important. So what they would do is eliminate the income threshold so that nobody would have to pay more than 8.5% of their income for health insurance, and if it does come to more than that, you'd get a subsidy.
Thanks, Rick. Rick Newman, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance. By the way, regarding aid for state and local governments, a story today in the New York Times says the worst-case budget scenarios did not materialize for many states. One big reason, stimulus checks that allowed people to keep spending and states to keep collecting sales tax revenue even when they were jobless, along with the usual state unemployment benefits. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, the Biden plan to reunify migrant families inside the U.S. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. The Biden administration will look to offer options for reunification inside the U.S. between parents and children separated under the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy on illegal immigration. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas yesterday repeated the Biden administration's message to prospective migrants to not make the journey to the southern border at this time.
We are dedicated to achieving and, quite frankly, are working around the clock to replace the cruelty of the past administration with an orderly, humane, and safe immigration process.
Mr. Mayorkas' statement, which came ahead of President Biden's virtual bilateral meeting yesterday with Mexico's president, was the clearest articulation yet that the task force's goal is to bring separated parents back to the U.S. The number of unaccompanied immigrant children arrested for crossing the U.S. southern border illegally was on pace to rise more than 50% in February from the month before. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Democrats' hopes of including a minimum wage increase in their COVID-19 relief bill seems all but dead as the Senate prepares to debate its own version of the House-passed aid package. Despite signs that Democrats have exhausted their most realistic options for quickly salvaging the pay hike, Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut says the hike will eventually happen.
I am very, very optimistic that we will find another path, even though the parliamentarian has ruled, and even though we may not have the votes right now, there will be another path.
Number two.
CDC Director Rochelle Walensky says the U.S. has hit a plateau in coronavirus cases and deaths as she warns states not to loosen restrictions too soon.
Please hear me clearly. At this level of cases with variants spreading, we stand to completely lose the hard-earned ground we have gained.
Over the past week, the daily number of cases and deaths has risen by about 2% compared to the week prior.
Number three.
Calls for New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's resignation are intensifying after a third woman accused him of offensive behavior, saying he touched her face and back and asked to kiss her moments after they met at a wedding reception. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says Cuomo's apology over the weekend didn't cut it.
Clearly was letting himself off the hook. For something that, for the women involved, sounded pretty terrifying. And no, we need a full investigation.
On Sunday, Cuomo said he had sometimes been overly personal while interacting with staff. Boy Scouts of America is proposing to pay $220 million toward a trust to compensate tens of thousands of former members who say they were abused during their time as scouts. Another $300 million may come from a voluntary contribution from local councils, but the local organizations have given no formal commitment. It's either the coolest thing you've ever seen or the creepiest. Genealogy platform MyHeritage is using artificial intelligence to bring still photos to life. In these clips, faces that were once frozen in time blink, turn their heads, and even smile. Their movements wavering between astonishingly lifelike and deeply unsettling. MyHeritage says users can experience a wow moment by seeing a treasured family photo come to life.
Well, I'll say it'd be a wow moment.
Did you look at this?
No.
That's pretty weird.
I'll go with your. I'll go with a combo of what you said. I'll go with creepy cool.
Creepy cool?
Yeah.
All right.
Coming up next, why we should talk to strangers. If you're a podcast listener, you know how your favorite shows spark ideas, but not necessarily conversations. But now there's something called Stereo, a free live broadcast social platform that enables people to have real conversations in real time, to actually interact with your favorite shows. It's an incredible way to build a real relationship between podcast creators and fans. I love being an active part of the shows I follow, being able to jump in on the conversation with my own take or to ask questions. It's a blast. And now, This Morning is excited to announce we're joining in on the fun and giving our listeners a new way to enjoy and be part of the show. Download Stereo from your favorite app store and be sure to follow me at Gordon Deal so you can connect with us whenever we go live. Stick around. We'll give you more details on how to engage with us at the end of today's show. Already interested? Get started now by going to stereo.com/GordonDeal. That's stereo.com/GordonDeal. Stereo, speak freely. Thanks for being with us. Social distancing and isolation mean we're missing out on serendipitous exchanges with strangers. So go chat one up. Here's why and how we should work to make them happen from Elizabeth Bernstein, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Elizabeth, what have you found?
I've always felt that strangers give us this boost, that we don't really ever understand how important just a complete stranger is to our life. And research, in fact, bears this out. Strangers can, like, soothe you. Sometimes they're the only person around if there's an emergency. They do boost our mood, though. They smile at us. We have a little brief exchange, and we feel better afterwards. But they can distract us. That little exchange, we could be standing in line, gross, worried, that exchange distracts us. It helps also expand our perspective. We learn things from strangers, you know, people we don't know who aren't like us. You know, think of all the things out there that we can learn and have perspective broadened. And they make us feel connected. They make us feel like we're not alone in the world. So that's all super important. That's research that's been around quite some time. But what happened this year, as we all know, is we're isolating. We aren't seeing as many strangers. And in fact, we're learning to be afraid of them. Fear strangers now. Research out of Yale shows that our networks, our social networks, have contracted 16%, and most of that is in what they call weak ties, the people you used to see in the elevator or at the gym, and then complete strangers.
All right, so you put together some tips on how to do this if you want to try to engage a stranger in a friendly way, or even just briefly. How do you do it?
We need to take every opportunity. And it's harder now to find strangers. It's harder to reach out to them. They're afraid of us. So we really need to take every opportunity. That is the first piece of advice. Like, where are you going to find these people? Well, we talk to customer service representatives, we talk to clerks in the grocery store, you know, neighbors if we're out walking about, the delivery people that come, the mail people that come, you know, if someone in line at the pharmacy, seems like we're all going to be at the pharmacy soon, hopefully. So, you know, you want to realize that all of these people are out there. And here's the thing, you also don't be shy, because people are also starved for any kind of connection. If you are, they are. And more times than not, they're going to be happy that you talk to them. They're going to respond positively. Another big piece of advice, of course, is to keep your social distancing and your mask on, but also you may want to signal with a nod or, you know, like some kind of hand gesture. Don't worry, I'm not going to come any closer, you know, not going to cough on you, but I am, you know, just saying hi. And also, research shows that we can tell if someone is smiling behind a mask. So you can smile, you can nod, you could wave. You don't even have to speak. Like, just any kind of recognition of another human being, eye contact. People, we know from research, if you make eye contact with another person, you feel better.
Yeah.
So any of this is a great start.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Bernstein, columnist at The Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Edgy, smart, bringing you what you need to know. This is America's First News, This Morning, with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday, March 2. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. A third accuser for New York's governor. J&J vaccine hits distribution centers today. FBI director testifies today about the rioting at the Capitol building. The Senate could vote tomorrow on a massive stimulus bill. S&P had its best day since last June. SPACs, or special purpose acquisition companies, did a record $109 billion in transactions last month. Starbucks today rolls out the new iced shaken espresso. J.J. Watt, now an Arizona Cardinal. And the Texas mail carrier who left a care package for a family with COVID. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Capital One. Capital One has no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One NA, member FDIC. School districts across the country that closed buildings in mid-March in response to the coronavirus pandemic handled the transition to remote learning with varying levels of success. But during the disruption, schools lost track of students. Many students who were present in the classroom in early March could not be found online, and others who showed up in the spring have not been seen since. It's a story by Mariah Belingit at the Washington Post. Mariah, what's going on?
So this is happening in a lot of big cities. We've seen enrollment drop across the nation in public schools. A lot of that is kids in pre-K and kindergarten who never showed up to enroll. So these were not kids that were necessarily in the school system before. But I spoke to Detroit, to places in Texas. It's really happening in a lot of large school districts.
Why is it important to the school system that these students be found?
Well, obviously, you know, the first reason is because they want to make sure that they're safe, that they're taken care of, and that they're learning. But there's also an issue of funding. When school districts lose enrollment, that often means they lose state dollars because a lot of state formulas, funding formulas, are based on the number of students that school districts have. But when I've talked to school districts, their first priority is making sure that they find the student and ensure that the student is safe and getting them back into school, getting them back into the fold.
And what have they found about where some of these students are?
So I spent some time in Detroit, Michigan, with a whole team that was going out and trying to touch base and connect with kids who had either not shown up at all or were showing up very infrequently. What they've found in some cases is that the students have broken devices, they don't know how to log in, the parents thought that they were logging in, but they were not. And then in some really, really sad cases, school district employees have come upon homes that don't have power. So the children simply had no way to connect to virtual learning.
Who's responsible, Mariah, for tracking these kids down?
So a lot of places, and the reason I wrote this story, a lot of places have had this issue in the past, but it's been much, much smaller. But because it's such a large issue this year in many places, they've had to develop new techniques, new efforts. So in Detroit, for example, they have rounded up a whole bunch of volunteers and school staff, and they dispatch these people and they give them a list of addresses to go check in at. So they're trying to meet people face to face. In other places like Sacramento and also New Mexico, school district employees didn't necessarily have a really robust way to go find kids before. And so now what they're doing is partnering with social service agencies, for example, to see if they have addresses for the children that they can provide, or a food stamp program is the same thing. And then this also allows them to check in and partner with these agencies to ensure that they're removing the barriers to learning, right? So things like trying to connect them to someplace that can help them with the power, trying to connect them with food programs and things along those lines.
We're speaking with Mariah Balingit at The Washington Post. So what happens when they come across students that need help?
Teachers are often sort of the frontline detectors of things like child abuse and neglect because they see the children every day. They know how they normally behave. And we know that child abuse reports have plummeted tremendously. And that's not because child abuse is, the experts don't believe that's because there's less child abuse. They just believe it's not being reported. And kids not going to school is a big reason for that. So it just makes it a lot harder to check in on the safety and welfare of kids from day to day when they're in a virtual setting and not coming to school every day. I think a lot of this issue is because school districts are not really good at communicating with one another. So, for example, in some states, if a child decides to move out of the district and enroll in another district, sometimes that child's home district doesn't find out about it. So that has been the case for hundreds of kids. For example, in New Mexico, where at the start of the year, they were missing something like 12,000 students. Many of those students were simply found in other districts. And in other cases, they were actually being homeschooled, but the parents had failed to file the proper paperwork. So some of this is a lack of communication between districts and not having a good unified way of communicating when districts or when children move across district lines.
Thanks, Mariah. Mariah Balingit at The Washington Post. Coming up next, Hershey's goes next level with its Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy. Hey, thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday. It's time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, football fans know there's been plenty of speculation about where future Hall of Famer J.J. Watt would end up after parting ways with the Houston Texans a few weeks ago. We now know that Watt will play next season for the Cardinals in Arizona. But before that, fans and media were doing their best to read every tea leaf to try and get a clue as to where Watt would land, including Peloton profiles. USA Today says someone discovered a Peloton profile for a KJ Watt, which appeared to list three NFL teams as a potential destination: Cleveland, Buffalo, and Green Bay. Watt got wind of the speculation and shot it down on Twitter, tweeting that he does not own a bike. That prompted a funny response from Watt's brother TJ, himself a star player for the Pittsburgh Steelers. TJ tweeted that he feels like he owed an apology to the fake KJ Watt for his aggressive post-race victory comments on Peloton.
That's funny.
It is hard to keep track of the Watt brothers sometimes.
Oh, yeah. With the initials and the TJs and the JJs. Yeah, I'm not sure how they do that.
And then there's Derek. Derek, right. The running back, for some reason. He did not get initials.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's Joseph and he could be DJ Watt. I don't know what his story
is. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that there is a J. I'm thinking his middle name is J. We have to do some research on that.
All right, hold on. What we're talking about. Let's see. Derek Watt. Let's see what comes up here. Right, running back. Derek Watt, NFL. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Derek John Watt.
There you go.
So I guess he could be DJ, but I guess he goes by Derek.
Yeah, he wanted to separate himself maybe from the brothers.
Understandably.
And if you're a peanut butter lover like me, you have reason to rejoice today. If you've ever been eating a Reese's peanut butter cup but would rather have it without all that pesky chocolate, you'll soon have your wish. Hershey's announced that it will be celebrating National Peanut Butter Day with the release of a new all-peanut butter cup. According to a press release, the new product will be called the Reese's Ultimate Peanut Butter Lover's Cup and will only be available for a limited time. Picture the traditional peanut butter cup, but with the outer chocolate shell, also now made of peanut butter. They will be available starting in April. A Reese's spokesperson called the new option every peanut butter lover's dream.
Boy, so that thing right now goes chocolate, peanut butter, chocolate in terms of layers.
But where's that other layer of chocolate?
Because it's encased, right?
Okay, I got what you're saying. So yeah, on top of each other, right? The cross section.
So now it's going to go peanut butter, chocolate, peanut butter, chocolate, peanut butter. If you were to look at it layers wise.
There's no chocolate involved in this particular one. No, it's all chocolate at all. All peanut butter. Yeah, the entire shell has been replaced with more peanut butter, like a harder peanut butter type of shell around the softer peanut butter in the middle.
Jeez,
we are chocolate free when it comes to this particular product.
Isn't this just then peanut butter?
Well, yeah, yes, it is. But it is.
What is the purpose of this then?
Because it's delicious. I don't know. I've done a complete 180 on all this kind of stuff. I used to not be a fan of things made of peanut butter.
Okay.
You know, I like peanut butter itself. But in recent years, not only have I gotten back into peanut butter itself, I eat it, you know, 3 or 4 times a week for breakfast now. But now all things made of peanut butter, I'm totally into. Even sort of fake, you know, candy peanut butter like this.
Just wow.
Bring it on. So I will definitely be trying to find this, I think, when it comes out.
So as you said, no more pesky chocolate at all.
Yeah, no.
This is just peanut butter.
I mean, the chocolate's okay, but at least for a limited time. You could overload on this very quickly. But, you know, like one or two of these would be, I think, really cool. And then you'll want the chocolate back.
I mean, it's just about your sandwich. I mean, if you're adding bread and jelly, you're just about there for the sandwich.
Right.
And you're a peanut butter and apples guy. That's kind of like your snack a couple times a week.
That makes me think it's sort of quasi-healthy if I add apples to it.
Right. Thanks, Mike. Get squeamish around needles. The new single shot COVID vaccine from Johnson & Johnson could make the prospect of vaccination more palatable and less stressful. Mary Rogers, an epidemiologist who retired from the University of Michigan's Department of Internal Medicine, told MarketWatch that her own research found that 16% of adult patients didn't get a flu shot because of their fear of needles. An extreme fear of needles is called trypanophobia. Most people with worries about needles have various degrees of anxiety or stress related to injections, and people with a fear of needles fear it for different reasons. For some people, it could be about pain. For others, it could be about a potential fainting spell. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The Biden administration's task force for reuniting migrant families separated by the Trump administration will give separated families the option to be reunified in the U.S. or their countries of origin. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
We intend to and will shortly harness the capabilities, resources, and desire of the private sector. This is all of government, but all of society effort to do what is right.
Mayorkas says the separation of thousands of migrant families during the Trump administration was, quote, the most powerful and heartbreaking example of the cruelty that preceded this administration.
Number two.
Immigration, the pandemic, and climate change issues were on the agenda when President Biden met virtually yesterday with the president of Mexico.
We're safer when we work together, whether it's addressing the challenges of our shared border, for getting this pandemic under control.
Mexico's president pressed Biden to give pharmaceutical company Pfizer permission to sell his country vaccines produced in the U.S., something that Canada has also requested from the White House.
Number three.
The Senate Judiciary Committee has advanced Federal Appeals Court Judge Merrick Garland's nomination to be Attorney General to the full Senate, paving the way for his confirmation to head the Justice Department, Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah.
Certainly he's going to be confirmed. Look forward to working with him and getting to know him better.
The vote was 15-7. A full Senate vote could come this week. FBI Director Chris Wray is set to testify today for the first time since the deadly January 6th deadly riot at the U.S. Capitol, with lawmakers likely to press him on whether the Bureau adequately communicated with other law enforcement agencies about the potential for violence. Questions about the FBI's preparations for the riot and investigations into it are expected to dominate Wray's appearance before the Senate Judiciary Committee. A Moroccan landscape painted by Winston Churchill and owned by Angelina Jolie is sold at auction for more than $11.5 million, smashing the previous record for a work by Britain's World War II leader. The image of the 12th century mosque in Marrakesh at sunset, with the Atlas Mountains in the background, was the only painting that Britain's wartime prime minister completed during the conflict.
Well, I guess he was busy.
Yes. Good point.
Didn't have time to paint a lot when he was trying to fight World War II. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Ask Dell. Thanks for being with us. A single mom in Texas was touched by the generosity of a local mail carrier after she was left a get well package on her front porch while her entire family was battling COVID. Lizette Lejeune told Fox News she felt ill prepared in terms of groceries to quarantine for 2 weeks inside her Houston home with her two young sons after she tested positive December 3rd. Without proper supplies, Ms. Lejeune said she had to rely heavily on her mother, who would have to drive about an hour to her house every day to drop off food and medical supplies. On December 15, Ms. Lejeune woke up to another delivery, this time a personal gift from her mail carrier, who had already been warned about the family's situation. In it, there were canned foods, cookies, gummies, and orange juice for the family. A note read, "Get well wishes. I hope you're all feeling better." Ever since then, Ms. Lejeune, by the way, has made it a point to check in on her family and friends who've tested positive and to make sure they are well-equipped to handle quarantine. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Want to do more than just listen? Be part of the show. No matter what you like, comedy, pop culture, lifestyle, sports, news, there's something you'll love on the Stereo app. Then submit audio messages to any of the hosts to join the conversation in real time. Download Stereo today at your favorite app store. Create your own avatar and profile, and be sure to follow me, at Gordon Deal, so you'll be ready to join us when we go live. This week, you can catch me on Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern. To get started, go to stereo.com/Gordon Deal. Stereo.com/Gordon Deal. Stereo, speak freely.